Okay, today's daf is Beitzah daf Beis Amud Aleph. Welcome to Maseches Beitzah. Good Chodesh to everybody. Today we're going to discuss, the Mishnah is going to talk about three different machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as they relate to Hilchos Yom Tov. We're going to see in the Rishonim what the connection is between these three machlokas. And then the Gemara is going to speak about specifically the first machlokas, which is about a Beitzah Shenol Dabi Yom Tov, and try to figure out what is the Nekudas HaMachlokas. The Gemara is going to have a total of four different shitos as to what the Nekudas HaMachlokas is. Rav Nachman and Amud Aleph is going to understand that they're arguing about Muktzah. Then we're going to have a second approach of Rabba on Amud Beis that's going to say they're arguing about Hachana. Then we're going to have Rav Yosef at the bottom of Amud Beis who's going to say they're arguing about Gzeru Mishum Peres Anoshrin, and Rav Yitzchak on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph who's going to say it's also Machlokas about Gzeru, but a different kind of Gzeru Mishum Mashkin Shezavu. And along the way we're going to mention how Rebbe, when he made the Stam Mishnayos, made the Stam Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos and the Stam Mishnah in Hilchos Yom Tov in Maseches Beitzah according to different shitos in Tanaim, and he dafka set it up that way, and we're going to discuss why he set it up that way. But before we begin anything, the first thing to discuss is what the name of the Masechta is, or why the name of the Masechta is what it is. And I mean that in two ways. Number one, someone emailed me yesterday, and this is a worthy of a brief discussion at least. Why is it that we call it Maseches Beitzah? That is not the topic of the Masechta at all. It happens to be the first word of the Masechta. We name Parshios HaShavua that way normally, where we call it after the first word of the Parsha rather than the topic of the Parsha. But when it comes to Masechtos and Shas, we typically don't name the Masechta after the first word of the Masechta. We name the Masechta after the topic of the Masechta. So the real answer is that it's not called Maseches Beitzah. It's called Maseches Yom Tov. All of the Rishonim refer to it as Maseches Yom Tov. They don't refer to it as Maseches Beitzah. How did it happen that we started calling it Maseches Beitzah? Don't know. But the real name in the Masechta is Maseches Yom Tov. However, I did see in the introduction to Chashukei Chemer on Maseches Beitzah, the newly published Chashukei Chemer, it's also worth mentioning, they just put out a Chashukei Chemer of Rav Zilberstein on Maseches Beitzah, and they also just put out a Dibros Moshe. They collected the various writings of Rav Moshe Feinstein on Maseches Beitzah and put out a new Dibros Moshe on Maseches Beitzah. But in the introduction to Chashukei Chemer, he quotes a Ben Yoyada at the end of the Masechta that says, Nira li b'siyata d'shmaya l'chein Masechta zu nikres b'fiya kol b'shem Beitzah. The kasha d'havle likra b'shem Yom Tov. It should be called Yom Tov, like it's called in the Rishonim. So he says, Nira shabachru likros b'shem Beitzah b'teva Rishona shal Mishnah lirmos kemosha etar negolas darka laholid Beitzah b'kol Yom. It's a remes to us about Talmud Torah in general, that just like a tarnagolas lays an egg each and every day, u'kemosha Beitzah nolad mimena efroach, and from that egg comes a little a chick, a bird. Kein chidushei Torah, chidush nolad mechidush. So too, when it comes to chidushei Torah, it builds on each other. One chidush comes, and another chidush comes from that original chidush. Al darach sheyomru bina shemevin davar mitoch davar. That's how bina works. That one understands one thing from another. That's the idea of beitza. That the concept of the beitza is that something else comes out from the original chidush. So in a certain way, it's symbolic of chidushei Torah. So that's how Ben Yoyada understands why it came to be called Maseches Beitzah, even though it's really Maseches Yom Tov. But as a remez to Talmud Torah, the other issue in the name of the Masechta is whether it's Maseches Beitzah or Maseches Beyah. What's the proper name for the Masechta? Do we call it Beitzah or Beyah? So on the one end, the Yamshel Shlomo in the fourth parak of Maseches Baba Kama in Simen Yud Aleph says that he was mekabel from Rishonim that they were nizar not to call Beitzim rather Beyim, because a person should always speak Balashon Nekiyah. There's also at the beginning of Maseches Pesachim about how we should always speak Balashon Nekiyah, and since Beitzim also refers to a part of the male anatomy, so we want to use a more nucky language, so we call it Beya or Beyim rather than Beitzim in general throughout Shas whenever we have the term come up. That's what the Yamshel Shlomo writes. However, the Teferis Yisrael on the Mishnayis says that it's not a bad word. Beitzah is not a bad word. In fact, Beya is just the Aramaic translation of Beitzah, so it's no better, meaning in both meanings it's the Aramaic translation, so it's no better to say Beya than Beitzah anyway. So he doesn't believe that that's the reason that people have come to call it Beya rather than Beitzah. Rather, he believes it's based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ehem and Beis. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ehem and Beis says that there was a certain town where they were not One of the Tanaim or Amoraim, I don't remember, came to visit the town, and he saw that people were not being nearly careful enough with Hilchos Tara, that everything that they were doing, it was really Tame. So he said, what's going on over here? Why are they allowing everything to become Mukhshul Kabul Tuma? So they said, oh no, a rabbi came to town a while ago, and he told us that May Bitzim are not Mukhshul Kabul Tuma, that swamp waters are not Mukhshul Kabul Tuma. So we allow our produce to come in contact with swamp water, because we know that it's not Mukhshul Kabul Tuma anyway. So the visiting rabbi said, no, he didn't say May Bitzim, there's no way, that's not true. What he must have said is May Beitzim are not Mukhshul Kabul Tuma, that egg yolks are not Mukhshul Kabul Tuma. That's not one of the Zion Mashkim, but you didn't hear him properly. You thought he said May Bitzim, he really said May Beitzim. So it's a totally different word. But swamp water certainly are Mukhshul Kabul Tuma, and they were all Nichshal in the Halachas of Tuma and Tara because they misunderstood this rabbi. So that Gemara over there says the moral of the story is you can't let anybody just go around saying Halacha Shiurim. If the guy doesn't know how to communicate properly, well then he could know a velt. It doesn't matter how much he knows. If he's unable to communicate the halacha properly and people are going to misunderstand him, so he needs to get heter hora'a. That's the source of what we call smicha. It's not the real smicha, what we call smicha, heter hora'a. That before a person could paskin shailas, he has to get permission to paskin, because we have to be able to ascertain that he's able to communicate properly. The reason for heter hora'a was originally not intended to figure out whether the person knows the halacha or doesn't know the halacha. It was assumed the person is not going to paskin if he doesn't know the halacha. So it's not an issue of whether he knows the halacha. The issue is whether he's able to effectively communicate that halacha. But anyway, from that story, says the Tiferes Yisrael, they realized that if you have two words that are so similar to each other that people can become easily confused, so they stopped calling eggs beitzim and they started calling them beyim. So he says that's why it's called beya and not beitza. If I'm not mistaken, the Margolius Yam, I didn't have a chance to look up, but the Margolius Yam and that Gemara in Masech Sanhedrin says you could also look at it the other way, that Gemara is a raya that they call the beitza and not beya. I mean, that Gemara is a raya against the Yam Shel Shlomo, that if they would have called it beya, then they never would have gotten confused. So obviously they must have called it beitza, and that was the source of the confusion. Okay, so that's a little bit about the name in the Masech. So let's see what the Masech actually says. Zok the Mishnah. Beitza shenol de Yom Tov. You have an egg that's laid on Yom Tov. Beishamay omrim tochal, beisilul omrim lo tochal. So Beishamay says one is permitted to eat it. Beisilul says that one is not permitted to eat such an egg. So right away, Tosfos says, what's the issue over here? We'll see in the Gemara four explanations of what the issue is. But l'chora, it's not only about eating in general, it's about tiltul as well. It's also about handling the egg. So Frek Tosfos, why don't we use a more general term to explain the machlokes Beishamay Beisilul, v'im tomer, amaylo tana osrinu matirin. Wouldn't the better terminology to use to say that Beis Shammai holds that it's mutter and Beis Hillel holds that it's aser rather than tochal and lo tochal? So it says Tosfos, v'chitema osrin mashmash aser le'olam, and lest you think that if we use the word aser, it will give off the impression that it's going to be aser forever, and the issue that we're dealing with this egg is a Yom Tov issue, and as soon as Yom Tov is over, this egg is going to be fine. It's not aser forever. Tosfos says that impression is, that assumption is wrong. Ze'eno, it's not true that the word aser means that something is aser forever. Damrina lekamana, frog should all be yomtov aser. V'hainu biyomo. We're going to see later on in that vav amir aleph that if a chick is hatched on yomtov, it's aser. But that's just for that day. V'od damrina mutter mosar shemen shemener. Rabbi Yuda oser. Hainu dafka bosiyom. And we're going to have later on that lamed that the leftover oil in the ner. Rabbi Yuda says aser also only means for that day. So don't tell me the word aser means forever, and that's why we don't want to use the word aser. So that's why we use tochal and lo tochal. That's not the reason that we use this terminology. So it says tells us Yeshlomar diavatani osun matirin isiomar shemash matirin abeitzainu letaltel aval ba'achila asura. If it would have said asur and mutter, we would have thought that when Beis Shammai holds that it's mutter, it's just that it's mutter to handle the egg, but that it in fact is asur to eat it. So we want to teach the greater chiddush that Beis Shammai holds that you're even allowed to eat it. That not only are you allowed allowed to be metaltel, you're even allowed to eat it. Then a little later on, Tosfos quotes the Ri, Dinakat ki alishna the stam beitza la'achila kaima, that the reason it says tochal and lo tochal could be for a simpler reason, and that is that what do you normally do with an egg? You normally eat it. So that's why it talks about achila versus tochal versus lo tochal, rather than asr and mutter, because that's how you use an egg anyway. Odish Lomar Tos says at the end, "Dinakal the Beishamai Tochal Mishum Demashma Achila Vitiltol, Dein Achila Below Tiltol." That when Beishamai says you're allowed to eat it, presumably that includes that you're allowed to be metaltal it also, because in order to eat something, you have to pick it up to eat it in the first place. So it's a more inclusive word, because when it says that you can eat it, you're also going to be metaltal it. Aye, why does Beisil say lo tochal? Because once Beishamai says tochal, so Beisil is going to use the same terminology that Beishamai uses. So Beisil says lo tochal. So that is machlokas number one in the Mishnah. An egg is laid on Yantif. Can you handle it slash eat it or not? Beishamai is makel that you can. Beisil says, Beisil's machmir, that one cannot. Second machlokas in the Mishnah, Beishamai omrim, sa'or b'kazayis v'chametz b'kikoseves, that the shear of sa'or for the Isra on Pesach is a kazayis of sa'or, whereas chametz, the Isra is a koseves. The Isra is a shear koseves, which is larger than a kazayis, the size of a date. Beisil omrim zevezeb b'kazayis. And Beisil says, both the shear of sa'or as well as the shear of regular chametz is going to be b'kazayis. There is no din of koseves when it comes to the iser of only chametz or sa'or on Pesach. So right away, Rashi raises the issue, what in the world is doing Maseches Beitza? This should be a Maseches Pesachim, this discussion about the shear of the iser of sa'or versus chametz. So Rashi writes, Mishum dahani tfas mili havim yikuli b'shamim mechumri b'sil gabi yom tov, tanu l'gabi adad, yigmur m'farish tamayu. The reason that we're going to have the three topics that we have in our Mishnah is that all three, what they have in common, is that they're machloks and b'sham b'sil, where b'shamay is the more lenient position, and b'sil is the more machmi position in Hilchos Yontif. So that's the thread that connects all of them. Tosa says the same thing, that the connecting thread between all of them is that Beishamai is more Mekel, Beisil is more Machmir, and they're all about Hilchos Yontif. Frek the Tzlach, wait a second, the first din of Beitza and the third din of Shochet Chayev Va'Of, which we're about to see, those are dinim that are Shayach on every Yom Tov. This second din of Sa'or and Chametz is only Shayach on Pesach, which, by the way, obviously is a Yomi coincidence, 2 weeks before Pesach to the day, so that it's only Shayach on Pesach. So the Mishnah should have written first the dinim that apply to every Yom Tov, and then the din that only applies to Pesach. So Tzlach has several approaches. We'll just say mention one or two of them. First of all, he says, according to Rabbeinu Tam on Tesam and Beis, in Tosus on Tesam and Beis, that we changed the girsa of the Mishnah, that by Shochet Chayev Va'Of B'Yom Tov, the third machlokas, it's actually Beishamai being machmir and Beis Hillel being mekil. So it could be that that's why we changed the order. If you assume like that, Rabbeinu Tam, we first want to go through the two cases where Beishamai is mekil and Beis Hillel is machmir, and then we'll mention the third case where, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the shitos are switched and Beishamai goes back to his normal position of being the more machmir one. So that would solve it very easily. Second possibility that Tzlach suggests is the Tana wanted to put the din of Shochet Chayev Ha'of, which is the third machlokas in our Mishnah, near the coming Mishnayos, which discuss issues relating to preparations for Shechita. So since moving a ladder to a bird nest to be able to grab a bird, why are you grabbing a bird? So that you could shecht it. So wanted to set up the coming Mishnayos by having the last halach of this Mishnah juxtaposed with those halachas, because it leads right into issues relating to Shechita. That's another suggestion that the Tzlach has. Now, the Shagas Aryeh points out in the Tshuva, in Simen Pei Aleph and Simen Pei Beis, that according to Tosos, Maseches Pesachim, Daf Chavtesim Beis, that there is no Malkus on the Lav of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. Fascinating discussion in the Rishonim, whether there's Malkus on the Isra of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh, the Isra of owning Chametz. Do we view Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh as a Lav She'ein Bo Maisa, as a Lav that there's no Maisa to violate? Because if I already own Chametz, how do I violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh? By doing nothing, by just keeping the Chametz. But it can be violated through a Maisa. If I buy Chametz on Pesach, then I'm doing a Maisa. So it goes into the definition of what we call Lav She'yesh Bo Maisa versus what we call Lav She'ein Bo Maisa. So Shita Satos is that there is no Malkus on Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh, not because Ein Bo Maisa, but because it's a Lav Anitik La'aseh, that since you could destroy it, so that's that fixes the problem of Bali Rabbi Bali Matzeh, and therefore there's no Malkus. So says the Shagas Aryeh, according to that sheet, that there's no Malkus in Bali Rabbi Bali Matzeh anyway, what difference does it make what the shear of the Isser of owning Chametz versus Sa'or is, whether it's Kezayis or Koseves? We pass in Chatzi Shear as Asr Min HaTorah anyway, you're not going to get Malkus anyway, because it's Lava Nitak La'aseh, so what Nafkamina would there be in the shear of the Isser? It's not a Nafkamina in terms of whether it's Asr Dar Raisa, because it's going to be Asr Dar Raisa even Bechatzi Shear, and it's not a Nafkamina in terms of Malkus. So Tzach says that there's a Nafkamina if a person keeps that shear around, whether he's allowed to get Hana from it after Pesach, according to Shitas Rabbi Shimon, that we pass in like Pesach and Dav Chav Chesem Beis, that Chametz after Pesach is Asr Bana Midra Banan, that there's an Isser called Chametz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach. Chametz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach is only if you violated this Rabbi Rabbi Matzeh. So it could be only if you had that sheer Chametz, would it be called Chametz Sha'avar Alav Pesach. It's not so poshut. The Prima Gadim written in the Psicha Tilchus Pesach is not sure that maybe Chametz Sha'avar Alav Pesach, they made the Knas even on a Chatzi Shir. That if there's an Isser Chatzi Shir to own it, so maybe the Knas Chametz Sha'avar Alav Pesach is even on a Chatzi Shir. But Shagasari, the Tzlach rather, assumes not that way. He assumes that it would only be on the Shir Chametz. The Tzlach also says, if a person burns the Chametz on Pesach, on Yontif itself, so if it was a kashir, then if it was a shir iser of Balyira, then you wouldn't get Malkus for burning it, because the Aseh of Tashbisu would be docha the iser malacha of Yom Tov. But if he burns a kazayis chametz and Yom Tov, according to Beis Shammai, that the shir of the iser of only chametz is a koseves, then the chori should get Malkus, because he violated malacha and Yom Tov for no good reason. Whereas according to Beis Hillel, he would not get Malkus, because we would say that Aseh is docha los Aseh. So But the problem with that approach, says the Tzlach, is that it would then turn out that Beis Shammai is more machmir and Beis Hillel is more mekel, and then this whole machlokas doesn't belong here. The only reason this machlokas is here is because this is Beis Shammai being more mekel and Beis Hillel being more machmir. But if the whole kunst of the whole machlokas is that Beis Shammai is going to say that you're not going to get that Beis Shammai is going to say that you're going to get malchus, Beis Hillel is going to say you're not going to get malchus, well then it turns out that Beis Shammai is more machmir and Beis Hillel is more mekel. Okay, wanted to talk a little bit about Pesach. So now the third discussion in our Mishnah. Hashochet chayva of biyomtov. A person shechts a chayva of on yantiv. So the halach is when one shechts a behema, there's no requirement of kisui adam. But when one shechts a chaya, a wild beast, or a bird on any day, you need to do kisui adam. What if you shecht on yantiv? To do kisui adam, you need to dig up some dirt. So Beishami Yom Miyachbar B'dekar V'yichasa. Beishami says, dig in and you can use the dirt and cover up the blood. Beisil says, no, don't be involved in Shechita and Yantif unless you already had dirt prepared from Erev Yom Tov. But everyone agrees that if you already did Shecht, so now you have a requirement to do the Kisei Adam. Even Beis Hillel would agree that you're allowed to dig in to the ground and get some dirt in order to cover up the dam. She'efer kira muchanu, and the ashes of a stove are always muchan, are always designated for this use and always available for this use. So the Gemara is going to explain what that line is doing over here, because we weren't talking about using efer kira, but apparently efer kira is going to be an option, as we'll see in the Gemara. So the whole daf is only going to discuss the first machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about a beitzah. That when an egg is laid on Yom Tov, is it mutter or is it aser? So b'maya skinan, what exactly are we dealing with over here? What kind of chicken are we talking about that's laying the egg? Ilema b'tarnagolas ha'medes la'achila. If it's a chicken that you had planned on eating, it was a chicken that was designated to be eaten, to be shechted and eaten. May tamar de Beis Hillel. Then why would Beis Hillel have a problem with it? Uchla d'ufrasu. The whole chicken is food. So the beitza that comes out of it is just food that comes out of food. So that should be totally mutter. It's just food that was separated from a larger piece of food. It's like cutting a piece of steak, and it should be totally mutter. That's not a violation of anything. Why would Beis Hillel be machmir? So what's the alternative? To say that this chicken was not something that you had planned on eating, rather you were using this chicken to lay eggs so that you can have eggs that the chicken produces? Well then, why would Beis Shammai think this is okay then? This is very clearly muktzah. It's something new that came into the world world right here on Yantif. So it should be a very clear violation of Muktza. So says Gemara, why is that a problem? Maybe Beishame simply doesn't hold of Muktza. Maybe he holds like the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that Moser and Nersha B'Shemen is Mutter, and that there's no issue of Muktza. So what's our issue? Maybe that's, you're right, it is Muktza. And Beishame doesn't hold the Muktza, and that's why Beishame holds its Mutter. So that's no problem. So the Gemara says, no, Kasalka Daitin, we work with the assumption that Afilu Man Deshari B'Muktza Bin Nolad Aser. Even Rabbi Shimon, who is more permissive when it comes to Muktza, when it comes to something that maybe you didn't have your mind on using from before Shabbos, but when something didn't even exist, when it was Nolad, when something just came into existence on Shabbos or Yantif, even Rabbi Shimon would say it's Aser. So that's why we ask Maitam Ayad Beishamai, that over here it's not just a Beitza that was Muktza, it's a Beitza Shenolad. It just came into existence on Yantif. That kind of Muktza even Rabbi Shimon holds. If you look at Rashi, Kasalka Daitan, Lahachi Parchinon, Maitam Ayad Beishamai, that we're asking on Beishamai, the Kasalka Daitan, the Afil Rabbi Shimon, the Shari B'Muktza, Bin Nolad Asir. That even Rabbi Shimon who allows Muktza would Asir Nolad. Why? Dilu B'Muktza Sfirale, Lo Makzi Inish Midaite, Midi Dechazile. When it comes to Muktza, the reason Rabbi Shimon is Mekil is because he assumes people do not put out of their minds the possibility of using something that might be usable. Avol Nolad Lo Aviyada Dinahave Didaite Lave. But when it comes to Nolad, he didn't even know that it would exist because it didn't exist beforehand. So you can't assume that he had das for the item on Shabbos or Yantif. So that's the question. According to Beishamai, why is it why is Beishamai Mekel over here? Shouldn't this be a very clear problem of Muktza in the strongest form that we know as Nolad? So the Gemara is going to have four approaches to understanding the Machlokas. Approach number one, Amrav Nachman, the Olam B'Tarnagolas HaMedes L'Gadol Beitzim. We're dealing with a Tarnagolas that was meant to lay eggs, and therefore it should be a Muktza problem. Ud Islay Muktza, Islay Nolad. Ud Lesley Muktza, Lesley Nolad. Our assumption was incorrect. Our assumption that there's a difference between Muktza and Nolad is incorrect. If you are concerned about Muktza, namely like the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, you'll be concerned about Nolad as well, and that's Beisilil's approach. And if you're not concerned about Muktza, like the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, who's not concerned about the Moser Hashem and Shebaner, so you're not going to be concerned about Nolad either, and that's Beishamai's approach. So Beishamai is like Rabbi Shimon, where he's simply not concerned. Beishamai like Rabbi Shimon, or Beisilil like Rabbi Yehuda. Beishamai assumes like Rabbi Shimon, Beisilil assumes like Rabbi Yehuda. So frak the Gemara, Umiyam Rav Nachman Hachi, does Rav Nachman really subscribe to that view that Beis Hillel goes like Rabbi Yehuda, that Beis Hillel is concerned about Muktza, and that's why he's concerned about Nolad? Vatnan, we have another Mishnah that Beishami Amr Magbiyin Me'al HaShulchan Atzamo Suklipin. Beishami says that if you have bones and shells on the table from food that you have eaten, but now there's no food there, there's just bones and shells, you're allowed to pick it up off the table. It's not a problem of Muktza to handle them and to remove them from the table on Shabbos, meaning even though they're not roi l'achila, they're not roi for anything else, and we're not worried about Muktza. But Beisilil says, you're not allowed to remove them by hand. You have to take the whole tray, the whole table, and shake it off of the table. That was our version of the Mishnah, but then Rav Nachman comes along and says, no, we have a different version, that Beishamai assumes like Rabbi Yehuda that there's a problem of Muktza, and Beis Hillel is the more makel one. Beis Hillel allows you to remove it by hand. So don't you see that Rav Nachman holds that Beis Hillel follows the more lenient position on Muktza, not the stricter position on Muktza? How could Rav Nachman explain that the machlokas in our Mishnah is about Muktza, and that's why Beis Hillel is machmir? Rav Nachman himself holds that Beis Hillel is makel on the issue of Muktza, that Beis Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon on the issue of Muktza. So before we get to the answer for Rav Nachman, just important to note the specifics of this particular machlokas that we're quoting about removing the shells from the table. Tosos raises the question, why is it that whichever shita it is holds you allowed to be misalik as a tavlo minara, that if you hold that it's Muktza, you hold the shells are Muktza, and there's a problem of Muktza, why is picking up the table any better? That should be what we call a basis ledavra aser. If you have something that is serves as a base to hold a mukta item, well, then the entire base becomes asr as well. You're not allowed to remove the tray that holds the candles because the flame is a davra asr, so everything that holds it is considered a basis davra asr. That's why you're not allowed to move candlesticks on Shabbos even after the flame is out, because the whole thing became a basis davra asr. So shouldn't this tray be a basis davra asr? So Tosa says three answers. Answer number one says Tosos Yeshlomer de Lepirush Rabbeinu Tam Nicha de Pirush Mesach Shabbos to love the best of the Dover Aser El Kshadaito La Nicham Shom Kalayom. Rule number one, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is Basas L'davra Aser is only when you put something there intending to keep it there all day. If you put something down temporarily, and that was the intention the whole time, that you're only temporarily placing something down, it does not become a Basas L'davra Aser. Answer number two says Tosos, Inami Kivin Davu Sham Ochlin, Havale Basas L'davra Aser U L'davra Mutter, Veshari Kedemuch Parak HaNotel. Very important rule of Basas L'davra Aser is that Basas L'davra Aser is not a problem when it's a basis for a davar aser and for a davar hamuter. And over here, it's both. It's both a basis of davar aser as well as for a davar hamuter, because you have food there as well. So that would avoid the entire problem of basis of davar aser. That's how we avoid the candlestick problem. The way to handle it is by putting something else on the table. You put something on the tray. You put a diamond ring or something of value, or challah, or a loaf of bread, or something like that, of value there, and then it becomes a basis of davar aser. Then you're allowed to move the tray that holds both of those things. Third answer, you're not putting the shells down on this table. The shells are falling down on the table as you're eating. So that's not called the basas davar aser. Basas davar aser is only when you place something there bekavana. So those are three important answers to Tosos that are very important la halacha. The Rashba writes other answers. He says that you're allowed to remove the table midin graf shel re'id. When something is disgusting, you're allowed to remove it on Shabbos, and you don't have a problem of buses. The Rashba also writes that since you put it there on the tavla in the first place, just so that it will be easy to remove, that makes it that it's not called a buses. Because if the whole purpose of putting it there was to remove it, then it doesn't become a buses. It becomes something that was meant to be removed the entire time. So that's an issue that the Rishonim discussed. But anyway, back into our discussion, how could Rav Nachman suggest that the reason Beis Hillel's machmir in our Mishnah is because Beis Hillel follows the generally more machmir view of Muktzah, the view of Rabbi Yehuda? We see that Rav Nachman holds that when it comes to removing shells and bones from a table, Beis Hillel follows the generally more lenient view of Muktzah, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Sans Gemara, Amalach Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman would answer very simply, Gabe Shabbos, the Sasam Lantanak Rabbi Shimon, when it comes to Shabbos, where we have a Stam Mishnah that follows Rabbi Shimon, Ditnan Mechatkunas Adulun Fnea Behema, Vesan Avelu Fnea Klavim, you're allowed to cut up an Avela that just died on Shabbos in front of a dog on Shabbos, because it's apparently we're not worried about Muktzah. So we have a Stam Mishnah that says that we're not worried about Muktzah. So Mukum Lel Beis Hillel, Rabbi Shimon. So Rav Nachman would rather have Beis Hillel conform to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, since we have a Stam Mishnah that goes like Rabbi Shimon when in the world of Shabbos. Aval, but when it comes to Aval Gabe Yom Tov, but when it comes to Yom Tov, the Sasam Lantana Rabbi Yehuda, where we have a Stam Mishnah that follows the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So where do we have a Stam Mishnah that follows the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda? The Tanan, the Mishnah says, Ein Mevakin Eitzim Min HaKoros, you're not allowed to chop off pieces of wood from beams, V'lo Min HaKoros Shenishbra B'Yom Tov, nor even from a beam that broke on Yom Tov. So the beam is already broken, still you're not allowed to chip off pieces of wood from it, because before Yom Tov it was not designated for this purpose. It's Muktzah. So you see clearly that the Stam Mishnah about Yom Tov assumes that there is a problem of Muktzah, the more stringent view of Muktzah. So since we have a Stam Mishnah in Shabbos that assumes the more lenient view of Muktzah, and we have a Stam Mishnah in Beitzah, we have a Stam Mishnah about Yom Tov that assumes the more stringent view of Muktzah, so when Rav Nachman had to figure out which way Beis Hillel holds, Mukum Lala Beis Hillel Rabbi Yehuda, he makes Beis Hillel follow Rabbi Yehuda by Yom Tov, and he makes Beis Hillel follow Rabbi Shimon when it comes to Shabbos. So says Gemara, great. That explains Rav Nachman. It does not explain the Stam Mishnayis. Why would there be a Stam Mishnah that follows one approach for Shabbos and a Stam Mishnah that follows the other approach for Yontif? Why would we follow the more lenient approach for Shabbos in the Stam Mishnayis and the more strict approach for Yontif in the Stam Mishnayis? So Michti, Man Sasmi Lemasnisin, who wrote all of these Stam Mishnayis? We know who it was. It's not anonymous. Rebbe. Rebbe's the one that wrote the Stam Mishnayis. He's the one that arranged the Stam Mishnayis. So why is it that by Shabbos he taught us a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, and when it comes to Yontif he teaches us a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda? How do you paskin? Do you paskin like Rabbi Shimon? Then teach us both of them like Rabbi Shimon. You paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? Teach us both of them like Rabbi Yehuda. Why by Shabbos does he have a Stam Mishnah that's more Mekel and Muktza, and by Yontif a Stam Mishnah that's more Machmir and Muktza? So Amri, so the answer is Shabbos Techamira V'lo Asil Zuliba Sassamon Rabbi Shimon de Mekel. That Rebbe assumed that when it comes to Shabbos, which is already a very strict day and people generally treat with a great deal of respect, people are not going to come to be mezalzel in Shabbos. People will not come to disrespect Shabbos, and therefore we can say certain kulas on Shabbos without having to worry that Shabbos is going to fall by the wayside. So when it came to writing a Stam Mishnah on Shabbos, Rebbe was comfortable going with the sheet of Rabbi Shimon that was more Mekel Amukta. He wasn't concerned that Shabbos was going to be sacrificed in any way. But Yom Tov Dekayil, Yom Tov, which is already so much more lenient, Va'asil Zulzulebe, and therefore people are going to come to be Mezalzel. Yom Tov, we already have Malacha Sochal Nefesh is Motor, the level of the Yisr Malacha is not the same in general when you have an Yisr Malacha, it's not a Chiyuv Skila. So Yom Tov, which anyway is so much more lenient, and people might come to be Mezalzel in it, so Sasam Lach Rabbi Yehuda de Machmir. Rebbe was more comfortable going with the more strict approach of Rabbi Yehuda when it came to Hilchas Yontif. Now the Maram Shif, he explains that Beis Hillel was machmir by Muktzah on Yom Tov and not by Muktzah on Shabbos, so that people not come to be Mekel Beis Yom Tov. Meaning the way the Maram Shif explains this Gemara is that when we're explaining that people are more likely to be Mezalzel on Yontif than Shabbos, we're not just explaining why Rebbe writes the Stam Mishnayis the way he does and that Rebbe paskins this way, but in fact Beis Hillel himself, says the Maram Shif, Beis Hillel themselves actually had a different shita by Shabbos than they did on Yontif. Meaning, even when the Gemara said that Rav Nachman attributed Beis Hillel to associated Beis Hillel with Rabbi Shimon's more lenient position when it came to Shabbos, and associated Beis Hillel with Rabbi Yehuda's more machmir position, Maram Shif understands that it wasn't just Rav Nachman making that up. That in fact was what Beis Hillel held. That Beis Hillel was more machmir when it came to Muktza on Yontif than he was when it came to Muktza on Shabbos. That is a great Chiddush, though. Most of the Rishonim assume not that way. Most of the Rishonim assume, the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ravid, most of them assume that Beisham and Beis Hillel never switched their machlokas from Shabbos to Yontif. Beisham held that there's one din for Shabbos and Yontif. Beis Hillel also held the same din for Shabbos and Yontif. It's just that some machlokas Rishonim what they really held. The Ravid writes that Beisham was machmir on Muktzah on Shabbos and Yontif, and Beis Hillel was makel on both. And because Beisham is always the machmir one. It's just that so that we don't come to be mekel on Yom Tov, Rebbe made a Stam Mishnah like Beis Shammai that Muktzah is going to be asur on Yom Tov. Another Rishonim assume otherwise, but there is a whole group of Rishonim that assume that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel did not adjust their opinions from Shabbos to Yom Tov. So says Gemara further now. Wait a second. B'mayu Kimta. What was this first approach to understanding the machlokes in our Mishnah? We assume that we're talking about b'tarnagolas ha'medes legadol beitzim. That we're talking about a chicken that you weren't planning on eating. It was a chicken that you were just using to lay its eggs. U'mishum muktza. And that the whole machlokes b'sham beisil is an issue of muktza over here. That here you have a beitza shenolad. So is it a problem of muktza? Is it not a problem of muktza? That beisil is more machmir, b'sham is more mekel. Well, ihachi ad miflugi b'beitza liflugu. If this chicken was designated for laying eggs and was not supposed to be meant to be used as food, so instead of arguing about the eggs that it lays, shouldn't we just be able to argue about the chicken itself? Meaning it was muktzah, it was something that you were not planning on eating. So shouldn't we just argue whether you could shech that chicken and eat it on Yontif? Why don't we have the, if that would be the same machlokas. It's machlokas about Mukta. So that should really be the machlokas. Answers the Gemara, lo diach kochan de beishamai de benolad shari. The reason we wanted to specifically emphasize the machlokas in connection to the egg and not in connection to the tarnagolas is to let you know just how far beishamai will go with their leniency. That beishamai is not only going to be makel on regular mukta, he's even makel on nolad. You see, yes, the chicken is mukta, but the chicken is regular mukta. It was here in the world and it's just something that the person wasn't thinking about using before Yantif. The egg is a more, what we would assume to be a more severe level of muktzah, namely nolad. So we want to show that Beis Shammai is even going to be making a nolad. So says Gemara, v'lefluge b'tarnagolas lo diach l'kochad v'esil b'muktzah asri. Well, wait a second. Why would you want to emphasize how lenient Beis Shammai is? Why not have the machlokas about the tarnagolas, and then you could emphasize just how strict Beis Hillel is? That Beis Hillel is not only machmir by an egg, Beis Hillel is even machmir by the hen. Beis Hillel is even machmir by the chicken. That he's even machmir that it's that's asra as well. So why don't you say the machlokas by a tarnagolas, and it would have emphasized just how strong Beis Hillel is in his view. The Chitayim and if you're going to say, no, if we have a choice which one to emphasize, are we going to emphasize the more lenient position or the more strict position? We always go, Koch de Tera Adif. We always emphasize the more lenient position. That's why we want to say the machlokas by the egg and not by the chicken, because we want to emphasize the Shita of Beis Shammai simply because it's the more lenient position. Well, says the Gemara, if that's the case, V'niflug b'travayu, you could have just as easily mentioned the machlokas on both the egg and the chicken, namely, Tarnagolas Homed. How much would it have cost us? One more word. Then instead of just saying that just say he ubeitzasa, the chicken and its egg. Instead of, so why would we limit the machlokas to only being about the egg? If the issue was all about mukta, we could have expanded the machlokas and made the machlokas both about the egg and the chicken. If Rav Nachman is correct that that's really what the machlokas is all about. So Tulsa just raises the question, well, wait a second, then the whole discussion of Koch Tera Adif that we have throughout all of Shas is never a good kasha, because you could always say that why would you choose Koch Tera? You could just tell me the machlokas on all the things and to emphasize both shitas, the Koch Tera and the Koch Tisura. So Tulsa says, no, the point over here is that it would have been so easy to mention the machlokas on both issues. It really would not have made the Mishnah longer at all. It would have just added a word or two. It's mamish nothing. Normally, when we emphasize is because if we were to mention every case that there's a machlokas tanaim, it would add a lot to the Mishnah. Over here, it's really not adding all that much. So that's why we emphasize that's why we're suggesting that we could have emphasized both the Koach Teterah and the Koach Tisurah. What's the Svara for Koach Teterah? So Rashi over here writes that the Svara for Koach Teterah is that if someone is willing to be Mekel, it shows a great confidence in their Psak. Because anyone could be Machmir. If you don't know what to do, you're always cautious, so we'd be Machmir. But if you have confidence in your Psak, then you'd be Mekel. The Tzlach over here writes that only makes sense if you're dealing with a Din D'Oraisa. That if you're dealing with Din D'Oraisa, so misafek, you would have to be machmir. So to be mekel, you must have great confidence. But when you're dealing with a din drabanan, misafek, you could be mekel anyway. So it doesn't have to take such great confidence to be mekel. Even if you just rise to the level of safek, even if you just gets to the level of safek, you'd already be mekel. So that's what the Tzach says, that maybe the whole concept of koch tatera adif only works on dinim daraisa, not on dinim drabanan, which of course is difficult in this Gemara. We're dealing with muktzah, so we have to figure out whether this sounds like a din drabanan muksa, so that's the issue that Tzlach deals with over here. So anyway, says the Gemara further now. So Ella Amar Rabba, Rabba says a second approach to our Mishnah. Since he rejects Rav Nachman's approach that the whole machlokas is about muksa, because if it were really about muksa, they should have argued about the tarnagolas as well. So Ella Amar Rabba, Yolam b'tarnagolas hamedus la'achila. We're dealing with the tarnagolas that you had planned on eating the whole time. Ubiyom tefshchalios achra Shabbos haskinan. And what did we say? If you were planning on eating it, then why in the world would you be machmir? Of course it should be fine. No, we're dealing with Yom Tov that comes out right after Shabbos, Umishum Hachana, and the issue is one of Hachana, that when was this egg made? This egg was made on Shabbos, so it was prepared from Shabbos to Yom Tov. V'ksav Rabba kol beitza de misyalda inna me'atmal gamrala. We're assuming that any beitza that's finished now, that's laid now, was finished yesterday. V'rabba l'tamei dam Rabba, and this is Rabba l'shitasa, who says, Ma'iduch siv v'yobayom ha'shishi v'chinu as ha'shar yaviyu, chol mechel the Shabbos. Shabbos v'chol mechlin yom tov. You're allowed to have something prepared on a weekday for Shabbos or yom tov, but vein yom tov mechlin Shabbos vein Shabbos mechlin yom tov. You can't prepare from yom tov to Shabbos nor from Shabbos to yom tov. So therefore, this egg was prepared on Shabbos for yom tov. Amle Abaye el meyat yom tov bialma tishtari. So Abaye says, okay, good. So then a regular beis shalav to yom tov should be mutter. So answer Gemara, no, gzeri mishum yom tov achra Shabbos. That's a gzeri because of yom tov that falls after Shabbos. So Shabbos yalma tishtari, a regular egg that's laid on Shabbos should be mutter. Gzeri mishum Shabbos achra yom tov. That's a gzeri because of Shabbos that can come out after yom tov. Umigas rinan, do we make such gzeris? Vatanya shochris tarnagolin some matzah babetim gemuros mutaris lachlan be yom tov. If you shech the chicken and you find eggs inside, you're allowed to eat them on yom tov. Ve'emisa, but if we make gzeris, ligzer mishum hanach to misyaldin be yomayon, we should make a gzera to an egg that was laid on yom tov. Amalei beitzim gemuros meim and milsa doshchichi umilsa doshchicha lo gazba rabbanan. That have, finding a complete egg inside a shechta chicken is a milsa doshchicha. So the rabbanan didn't make a gzera in that case. Just to make a ha'ara, Tosus points out that there's a machlokas over here whether the mun fell on yom tov or not. That's a key machlokas in the halachas of Lech Mishnah. Maybe I'll give tonight's shiur about that.